This is Everything is Workable, a series of podcasts and blog posts that examine how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. My name is Caitlin Hatch, and I'm a creative polymath, which is a nice short way of saying I'm a designer, artist, animator, and published author. My purpose in life is to inspire curiosity, to inspire people to let go of the limited ideas that they have about themselves and their experience. Through the posts and podcasts of Everything is Workable, I hope to share some insight into what this means and give you some ideas of how to make your world so much bigger. I'll have various different guests to share their stories, as well as sharing my own, all with the aim of seeing everything as workable, even the most uncomfortable situations. In a talk my teacher Elizabeth Mattis-Namgal gave at Omega in 2013, she said, "We are never just one way to begin with." The first time I heard this, it sort of blew my mind. This was because she'd put so eloquently into words something that I'd started to really understand, but at the time I was really struggling to express it. So it was something I was like turning around in my head, and it was like, she went into my head and picked out my feelings around something and just said it. At the time, I was just starting to work on noticing the dualistic ways that I approach my experience. Dualism being a black and white view of the world. We live in a dualistic society. Sometimes it's actually really helpful, but generally, the idea of dualism is it's very much good versus bad, rice versus potatoes. I digress. Dualism is in the labels that we use for ourselves and for others. So we often speak of ourselves and others with a very fixed view based on the most current experience that we have had. For example, someone who has caused us harm in some way. Even if it's nothing major, like someone cutting us off in traffic, for example, we decide they're a jerk. And then we just see them as a jerk, or inconsiderate, or oblivious. Someone who shouldn't have a license because they're so clueless. This is dualistic because we're pinning an identity on them that's merely a reflection of a single interaction that we've had. Because we've pinned them as a jerk, we've also kind of dehumanized them. We've put them in a category separate from ourselves. One that we see as beneath us, or lesser than, or different, you know? And we're not like that. It means that we couldn't possibly, or wouldn't possibly do something so careless as cut someone off in traffic. This isn't fair on us either, because we can and would and will do such careless things. It happens. And honestly, it's not such a big deal. But by viewing things dualistically, we really, really make it a big deal. For example, right now, some of you might be thinking, but cutting people off in traffic is dangerous. It could lead to an accident. It is a big deal. To this, I would ask, can you know, absolutely, with 100% honesty and accuracy, that you have never, once in your life as a driver, if you drive, I realize not every one of you is listening to this as a driver, cut someone off, or forgotten to signal, or run a yellow light, or not come to a full and complete stop at a stop sign, are gone over the speed limit? I know that I'm guilty of these things, intentionally or otherwise. It happens, because I'm human. The thing about labeling someone else as this big jerk is that when we inevitably do something similar, when we notice it, we turn that against ourselves. As the good driver who was cut off by the bad driver, it all seems so simple. But if we cut someone off and suddenly realize that we did it, oh God, maybe that makes us bad. Well, no, because we are not just one way to begin with, and neither is the person who cut us off. In any given moment, a single person is so many things, and those things are always changing. I got to thinking about this the other day while I was eating raspberries. Yes, raspberries. I spend a lot of my life contemplating things, no matter what I'm doing. Stay with me here, okay? As a child, I consumed a lot of oranges and a lot of blueberries. These were my primary sources of nutrition. I used to eat 3 to 5 oranges a day. And when blueberries were in season, I could eat 5 kilos of them in like a month. I'm not exaggerating. My mom would buy a pallet of like 10 kilos of blueberries, freeze about half of them, and I would eat about half of them. Between the frozen ones and what was left unfrozen that was supposed to be there for the entire family to snack on. and my dad, he had to go and buy oranges every single day in order to keep the fruit bowl stocked. I remember when I realized that there were always oranges in the house, and it occurred to me that that meant that he did have to go to the grocery store every day, and he confirmed that for me. He's like, yeah, you really, if we ran out of oranges, well, that just wasn't an option to run out of oranges. So everyone who knew me as a child knew, they know that blueberries and oranges, they're my favorite. I've always known that blueberries and oranges are my favorite. But actually, they totally aren't anymore, and they haven't been for years. I think the oranges are something that I slowed down on around the age of 10 or 11. And then as for blueberries, well, they've been relegated to second place to raspberries since I was a teenager, which was where this whole train of thought came from. But I didn't notice this for years. If I was asked pointedly what my favorite fruit was, I'd answer blueberries, because that's what the answer always had been. But if I actually thought about it, I'd actually know that my preference, if I was given a choice, I would pick raspberries. This seems really fluffy and light, and maybe a bit strange. I get it. Like, why is she going on about what sort of fruit she likes to eat and how she's changed her mind about what she prefers? Well, the point is that when we see ourselves dualistically, it becomes really wrapped up in our identity. And then the result is that we may outwardly present ourselves in one way, because that's how we once were, or because that's what we think other people expect of us. But in fact, we might have changed. And as well, you know, if someone has always presented themselves to us in a certain way, we may not notice when they've changed, because we have this fixed idea, you know? Oh, like, my parents have this fixed idea. Caitlin's favorite fruit is blueberries. That's not true. When we see ourselves in a fixed view, like, I am this way, it prevents us from seeing how we change. Or it might even prevent us from changing at all. So fruit might seem a bit lightweight, but let's look at something a bit heavier then. Smoking, right? Okay, I've never smoked, so I can't speculate. Can only speculate, really. But I'm sharing this based on some conversations that I've had with both smokers and with ex-smokers. Because this is the kind of stuff I like to ask about. So, yes, cigarettes are incredibly addictive. They are one of the most addictive things out there. And that in itself is hard enough to contend with when it comes to giving them up. I get that. But smoking is also a really big identity thing. The nearest example that I can think of for my own life is coffee. I used to drink a lot of coffee, 1 liter of coffee a day. Seriously, I love coffee. I'm not even saying this in past tense. I love coffee. I love the way it tastes. I love the aroma. I love the culture of coffee shops that go with it. I definitely identify as a coffee drinker, but I've not drunk coffee in over 10 years. Giving it up physically wasn't nearly so hard as you might think. I didn't really go through any withdrawal, although I did just stop cold turkey. I just stopped drinking it. No weaning off. I went from 1 liter a day to nothing for about 8 months, I think. When I drank it again, I still had the taste for it, but I was also really aware of the effect that it had on me, which was something I hadn't necessarily been paying attention to before. So I have a history of anxiety. Drinking something that makes me jittery, ramps me up, and sends my mind worrying is really not sensible. So I don't drink coffee at all anymore, because it's not healthy for me. Easy to stop something that I knew wasn't helping me health-wise, but it was actually really hard to give up the identity of coffee drinker. So I feel like I've got a bit of appreciation. You know, it's hard to give up the identity of smoker, especially when you've been doing for many, many years. Without that aspect of my identity of coffee drinker, I really did have a loss of a sense of self. And this is what it means to have a fixed idea about ourselves. We think, I am a smoker. And we don't realize how intrinsic that is to our identity and how important that sense of identity is until it goes away. It may seem silly, but when we choose to give up something we've also wrapped up in our identity, we tend to go into crisis mode. A bit of like, who am I if I am not a smoker, a coffee drinker, the angry one, right? Like if we start working with aggression and find ourselves calming down more, we can totally go through a crisis of like, oh God, who am I if I'm not the aggressive one? For me, the antidote is this phrase. Remember, you were never just one way to begin with. Identity is not written in stone, and self is actually empty of meaning. Self is constructed by these external likes and dislikes, and it's only when we hold on to the sense of self that it can become a problem. When I tell myself, I am not just one way to begin with, or if I'm struggling with someone else and a fixed idea I have someone else, I tell myself, no one is just one way to begin with, I'm more receptive to how I show up in any given moment, regardless of past favorites or dislikes or habits or whatever preferences I had. And then I'm also more receptive to how other people show up. It acts as a reminder for me that just because so-and-so was really grumpy the last time that I hung out with them doesn't mean that I have to be prepared for them to be grumpy the next time that we hang out. And just because I was really on and super sociable the last time I went to a party doesn't mean I won't be feeling really blasé and detached the next time I go to a party. No state of mind is permanent. No preference is permanent. No emotion is permanent. They can all feel really, really permanent when we look at things really dualistically. It can feel like the sense of needing to know, right? We think we know who we are, and we think we know who another person is. But actually, this need to know is really disrespectful to ourselves and to everybody else and to the world, because we never were just one way to begin with, and we never will be just one way to begin with. We're very complex creatures, and it doesn't take much just to look at your life and go, yeah, actually, you know, I've got a lot of different interests and passions, and my passions have changed over time. And when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I do identify as an activist now, but I was kind of I won't say a militant activist, but I was a pretty angry activist. My cause at that time was to let people know about sweatshops. I thought sweatshops were just abysmal, and I couldn't believe that there was anyone in the world who could possibly condone such a thing. And I had really fixed ideas about it. And what it meant was that I couldn't really communicate things clearly, because I couldn't see the wholeness of a situation, because I felt like it was just very one way, you know? Sweatshops are bad. It meant I wasn't willing to look at socioeconomic pressures. I wasn't really willing to look at my part in it, society's part in it around me. Western culture demands the responsibilities that we had, the way that capitalism plays a role. There was a lot of stuff. It was very, very narrow in my view. I still identify as an activist, but one thing I've definitely learned in this remembering, telling myself, coming back to, nothing is ever just one way, is that every single situation is incredibly complex. It can't be looked at in a really black and white way, and the only way to approach it effectively is to be able to see all sides of it. And it's not just both sides of it, it's all sides of it. There's never just two ways to look at a situation. Arguably, there's an infinite number of ways to look at a situation. That's what this phrase does. It really interjects that idea that it's either like this or it's like that. Like this person is like this or this person is like that. People are either good or they're bad. No, that's not how it is at all. When we start letting go of the fixed ideas we have about ourselves and others, we really do start to see how workable everything is. is we see this flexibility. We see that there's a lot more going on than we might have been looking at before. It all becomes fresh and new. It means that we let ourselves change. We let other people change. And we don't have a locked-in view of how things should or shouldn't be. Our life isn't constrained by labels or ideas or concepts that came before. Instead, there's this whole sense of curiosity, and there's a whole lot more possibility for things to be different. Thank you for listening to Everything is Workable, a Funwolf Creations production. If you have a question you'd like to ask, a topic that you'd like me to tackle, or if you'd like to become a contributor, you can get in touch with me through www.vast-skythinking.com by visiting the Everything is Workable blog. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.